This is Fresh Air. I'm Artie Moskowain. Poet Lee Young Lee uses his writing to make sense of his family's past. Both his parents were born into wealthy, politically connected families in China. His mother lived in a sprawling compound, waited on by a large staff of servants, including 30 seamstresses. His grandfather was the first elected president of China until he tried to make himself emperor and was thrown out. Lee's own father was the personal physician of Mao Zedong for 9 months before he fled the country with his family in the late 1950s. Lee Young Lee has written two books of poetry. In the foreword to his first book, Rose, the poet Gerald Stern wrote, "What characterizes Lee's poetry is a certain humility, a kind of cunning, a love of plain speech, a search for wisdom and understanding." Lee has just written a memoir called The Winged Seed, in which he tries to piece together the various strands of his family's history. He told me his parents have always been reluctant to talk about the past. He said he slowly learned that his mother's childhood had been privileged but constricted.
She talked about it later. When I was growing up, when I was much younger, she didn't talk about it at all. And I would, of course, sneak into family albums and find these pictures of all these, ladies with their hair done up in silks and standing there in the very posed scenes in public gardens. And they had a private zoo, and you know, they had pictures taken in the zoo. And I wanted to know who these people were. And she would tell me, "Well, this is actually the person you were named after, and this is your, you know, the third daughter of the eighth wife," and so on. And it was very complex. It was a kind of complex hierarchy of all these relatives. And when I would bring them to her attention and ask her about them, she would at first, you know, talk about them with some enthusiasm, and then she would resist. It was almost as if she realized she was talking about something she really didn't want to get into, and she would resist. But later on, we've been able to talk about it more and more.
What about your father and the family he came from? Did they have the same wealth and status as your mother's family?
They did, you know, but his father was, well, I would have to say he was almost insane. There, my father's experience growing up was very different. His father kept them, kept his family in a kind of virtual poverty, even while he was becoming richer and wealthier and traveling. But he kept his children and his wife in a kind of dilapidated house outside of Beijing. And I talk about that in the book and how strange that was for my father.
Well, what happened then when the Communist Revolution swept through China? What happened to your parents' families?
Well, my father's father, who was very savvy, by that time had already purchased a lot of property in Indonesia and America. He had something going with the Bank of Rhode Island and so on, so it was very easy for him to leave the country. And because he had things set up in other countries. But he left his family, his children. And my mother's family stayed on, and they tried to work with the nationalists at first, you know, and then later on they tried to work with the communists, but eventually they lost their wealth, and they lost all their position, and even my great-grandfather's name was kind of mud by that time.
And is that when he took his family and went to Indonesia?
Right, right. He took his wife, my mother, and his daughter. But he left his oldest son there in China and didn't get him out until 26 years later.
Your father was arrested in Indonesia in 1959. What was his crime?
He was charged with working with the CIA to bomb military installations on the island of Java. But of course, it was all false. He was just a teacher. You know, he was teaching English and religious thought, Western religious thought and Eastern religious thought, a kind of comparative religion course at Gamaliel University, which he helped found. And I think it was because of this leaning toward the West that got him in trouble. And, you know, the Sinophobia that swept through Indonesia at the time, and is still very present there now, was responsible for, all the Chinese being rounded up and locked up at that time.
He was sentenced to a leper colony. Was that an unusual punishment, or were many prisoners, criminals, sentenced to leper colonies?
No, a lot of them were. That wasn't unusual. I guess what was unusual was that he didn't get leprosy, you know.
Your father then was transferred from the leper colony to a mental hospital.
Right.
And it was there that he began to preach. Did he have some kind of religious or spiritual conversion while he was in prison?
He went to the mental hospital because my mother discovered that if he were at the mental hospital, she could visit him more. He nearly died when he was in prison, and they actually came to him while he was lying on his cot, and they asked him, well, what color suit would you like to be buried in, you know, brown or blue? And he had to make that decision, so he was that near death. And in fact, he didn't die, and he credits divine intervention for that. And his love for the Bible, his intellectual love for the Bible became a kind of more than intellectual love. It became, an emotional attachment and spiritual belief, just faith.
Once your father then was finally released from the mental hospital, came home, your parents decided you really had to get out of Indonesia. You had to escape.
Mm-hmm.
How were they able to do that? How were they able to escape from a country where clearly he was a marked man to some degree?
Right. Well, he attributes that to divine intervention, too. The details were he was being transferred from the prison system on Java to a prison system in Macau. And while the whole family was going to be transferred, and while we were on the boat to Macau, the boat was docked, not docked, but it was a few miles outside of Hong Kong. It had stopped and dropped anchor. And a smaller boat had pulled up beside it, and a man boarded our boat. And it turned out the man was an ex-student of my father's. He was looking for somebody who had chartered this smaller boat, and the man wasn't on board. So there he had this already chartered boat. It was empty. And my father asked him, well, do you think we could get on it, and you could just take us to Hong Kong instead of... That would be an escape. And he said, well, if you could get past the guards. So my father took the chance and walked up to the guards and said, well, our boat is here and so on. And the guards looked through our passports, and through an oversight, they let us go. And we were on this boat on our way to Hong Kong, and that was how it went down.
Do you actually remember this?
That I don't remember. What I do remember, and I've always had this image, was looking out of a porthole window and seeing the Christmas tree, this huge green lights, a Christmas tree on the shore of Hong Kong. And that's what I remember.
Well, I want to talk some more. But first, we have to take a very short break. And my guest is the poet Lee Young Lee. He's just written a book about his family. It's a remembrance, as he says. And it's called The Winged Seed. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Here's Lee Young Lee reading from the opening of his memoir, The Winged Seed.
2 a.m., I wake to rain. Apartments dark where other travelers sleep. In my dream, my father came back, dressed in the clothes we'd buried him in, carrying a jar of blood in one hand, his suit pockets lined with black seeds. His gray wool suit seemed hardly worn, except for the shoulders and elbows, which were buffed smooth, I guessed, from rubbing against his narrow coffin. And then I saw his shoes. They were completely wrecked, their leathers cracked, nicked, creased, cross-creased, their puckered seams, where the stitching came unraveling, betrayed his naked feet. Sockless, his ankles were frightening, and only the thinnest soles kept him from walking in bare feet. I began to cry, realizing he walked the whole way. I thought of him climbing alone the hundreds of identical stairs up from his grave in Pennsylvania, and then, obeying some instinct, walking west to Chicago toward his wife, children, and grandchildren. When did he begin his journey? I wondered. In the dream, I felt ashamed, disturbed by the thought that while he looked for me, for us, his family, we were quite unaware of his arrival, which might have taken him years for all I knew, since no one ever told him where to find us. It hurt to think of him walking for years along the blind shoulders of highways, through fields, along rivers, down sidewalks of North American cities and villages, walking day and night, talking to no one, walking a dead Chinese man separated from the family he'd brought to this country in 1964, a stranger to most when he was alive, an Asian come to a country at war with Asia, now a stranger in death. I kept looking at his shoes.
That's Lee Young Lee reading from the opening of his book, The Winged Seed. Your writing seems to be then a conversation with your father. You seem to keep conjuring him up, I guess. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's what your writing is about?
That might be what the subject of the writing is about, but I don't think that's what I'm up to when I'm writing, you know. I think what I'm trying to do is get to a place where I'm speaking with a virgin voice, a voice of complete disinterestedness and detachment, in order for me to hear something that isn't only personal to me. I really would like to hear, I would really like to speak straight from the soul. I think if I could do that, then the soul would no longer be in this realm of rumor for me that it is. I could, the words would be an incarnation of the soul. And that's what I'm up to when I sit down to write, you know.
Well, you mentioned the fact that English is your second language, and your family, your father and mother brought the family to Western Pennsylvania when you mm-hmm. were very little. Mm-hmm. Your father was a preacher. I believe you were about 6 years old. Mm-hmm. What was it like at that age to settle down? I mean, there'd been a number of years of rootlessness and a number of years of real fear. What was it like to settle down in a strange American town?
Well, it was a violent experience, ultimately. You know, there are many, I think, small working class towns throughout America that are very beautiful, but there's a kind of underlying violence in them that's expressed, I think, through like football in the case where I grew up. But there's a kind of violence, I think, to assimilation in general, you know, the racism we encountered and things like that. But at the same time, my parents always told us that we were going back home. So the whole time I was living there, I always had the feeling, well, this is just another stop, you know, along the way. We're going home. It hasn't been until recently, I mean, like in the last 4 years, that it has suddenly dawned on me, I'm not going anywhere. This is home, you know.
Have you gone back to China?
Yes, I went to China about 4 years ago. It was then that I realized the idea that we're going home, it was just ridiculous. Because when I went to China, I realized, well, this isn't home. And when I went back to Indonesia, I realized, well, this isn't home either. So where was it my parents thought we were going back to, you know? And that was when I realized that America, North America, is my home.
So is America your home by process of elimination then?
You know, I might say this. Emotionally speaking, this doesn't even feel like my home. I feel as if there will be no home for me. Maybe it's not just me. Maybe it's everybody. I don't know.
Are you lonely?
I used to be intensely lonely. I'm not anymore. No, I'm not.
Do you know why?
I think it's because this idea that I grew up with about going back, I still carry it with me. But I realize that I'm going back now, that with every step I take, I'm going back. I'm going home.
Poet Lee Young Lee has written a memoir called The Winged Seed. This is Fresh Air.